Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 3 of 1 John. I'll begin by reading it. Behold what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore, the world knows us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it does not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that has this hope in him purifies himself even as he is pure. Whosoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And you know that he was manifested to take away our sins, and in him is no sin. Excuse me. Whosoever abides in him sins not. Whosoever sins has not seen him, neither known him. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that does righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that commits sin is of the devil, for the devil sinned from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whosoever is born of God does not commit sin, for his seed remains in him. And he cannot sin, because he is born of God. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever does not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of the wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed from death into life, because we love the brethren. He that loves not his brother abides in death. Whosoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Hereby know we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso has this world's goods and sees his brother has need and shuts up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth, and shall assure our hearts before him. For if our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things. Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then we have confidence toward God. And whatsoever we ask, we receive of him, because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. And this is the commandment, that you should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandment. And he that keeps his commandments dwells in him, and he in him. And hereby we know that he abides in us as the Spirit which he has given us. There's some powerful stuff in this little passage of John. John wrote more about love than any other writer in the Bible. And why would we think that would be so? Where did he lay his head? On the breast of Jesus' breast, on his chest. So in that process of having it laying there, what do you think he heard? He heard the heartbeat of God. So he heard the truth of God in spirit. So that's the big thing we have to realize. This was a man, his point of view was coming from the same place as God's heart. Because Jesus' heart was the heart of God. Okay? Now let's go back to this first verse again and see what it says. I can't take the first verse lightly, because too many times there's something in the first verse that sets the scene for the rest of the whole chapter. And most people read over the first part and say it's back there somewhere. In this first verse it says, behold. Now the word behold is not necessarily what it should be. It should be see or look. And I think the word see fits it the best. See what manner of love the Father has bestowed, right? Or given to us, it should say. Not bestowed upon us, but given to us. In order that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore, or through this, the world, the cosmos, knows us not, because it knew him not. It said, behold what manner of love, see what manner of love he's given us. What manner of love has he given us?
Unconditional.
Unconditional, the Greek word agape, love. Mm-hmm. No strings attached. He loves us because of what reason?
No reason.
Because we're his children.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't mean, Lois. He loves us because we're his children. That's all the necessity there is. And what person on the face of the earth is not a child of God?
No.
We're all children of God. Some are obedient and some are disobedient. That's all. But they're all children of God. That's why he can say he loves all of them. Even if you have two children, one obedient, one disobedient, doesn't mean you don't love me less. Just mean one needs more attention than the other one. Right? Needs more work done to get him straightened out. That's all. And he said, therefore the world knows us not because it knew him not. Didn't he say we were aliens and strangers in the land? Sojourners just temporarily passing through here. See, we're not of this world. Right? If we can get that in our understanding, just because we're here and we kind of resemble the other people walking around on the face of the earth here. I mean, we have two hands, two feet, two ears, two eyes, a nose, and a mouth and everything. Does that mean we're one of them?
No.
But see, that's what people think. Just because your anatomy fits the picture of a human being, thank you, they think that's all it takes to be, you're just as much in the world as we are. No, it's in here. It's in here that we're in the world. Is the world got a hold of you to the point that you can't separate from the stuff? Then the world's got you. You are part of the world. But when you can just say, it's all my Father's, right? Whatever I need, I got. I don't have to worry about gripping and holding on to it. When the Jews walked through the desert, the farther they went, what'd they do with the stuff they carried out of Egypt? See? And as we progress in our life, we should be finding ways to pass this off, not just throw it in the desert. That wasn't what it was meant anyway. It was just showing that their focus was no longer on the things of the world, but upon God in our walk. So we ought to learn to find ways to get it to people that absolutely need things versus just giving it to the first person who walks by.
That's also the thought process. It's just letting go of the thought.
Well, and that's, see, first it has to be let go of in here. If you can't let go of it in here, you'll never let go of it out here in your hand.
Correct.
Because your brain controls that, see, even. But, you know, when the love of the world is greater than the love of God, then we're going to hang on to everything like it's really valuable.
It's not about the tangible stuff.
No. It's the intangible, the spiritual things that most people can't understand. And that's okay. Because he hasn't given them an ear to hear and an eye to see yet.
What's that word? Smart?
Flesh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stuff. Thinking that's where it's at. That's all important. You're missing it.
Well, when you're in the world, that's all you see and that's all you can hear. So you can't get upset at a dog because they bark. I mean, dogs bark, you know.
It's just a telltale sign of where you're at.
If when your eyes are open, you can see where they're standing.
Yeah.
See, just discernment. Verse 2, he says, beloved, someday we are the sons of God.
Now.
Someday when we fly away, we'll be sons of God.
At this
time. Now. At this time. The word actually says, at this time.
Uh-huh.
Beloved, at this time, we are the sons of God. Didn't say you're going to be. Didn't say you already were. Just said, right now, you are. Didn't he? At this time, you are the sons of God, and it does not yet appear what we be, shall isn't there. But we know that when he appears, that shall isn't there either. We cross out that next shall too. We be like him because, not for, but because we see him just as he is. See, if you realize that you truly are a child of God, and just saying to yourself, I'm a child of God, does that make you a child of God?
No.
Okay. The Word of God is what changes. Understanding and hearing the Word of God changes this nasty, vile, earthly thinking process into the thought process of God. When you understand, my God, it's the truth. And that's what changes you, is this thing. Because you can never change anything you do outside. The way you express yourself to other people around you, you can't fake that. Eventually, you know, somebody will catch you off guard and you'll explode on them, you know. But if you realize this is the truth and there is nothing else but truth, how would you react? Can anybody catch you off guard? Can't do it. See, there'll always be something to trip you up. But whenever you realize truly you're a son of God, you'll act like a son of God. Son of God doesn't do those things. True? See, that's what we got to see.
So that carnal man always out there judging.
Carnal man is out there trying to convince you to come back.
No, I mean, he's always out there saying, you know, look like a son of God.
Oh, the carnal man says that, yeah. You don't look like a preacher. What's a preacher look like? Yeah. Well, sure. What they think it did to all the prophets. They didn't think they were really true men of God, women of God. So.
Well, they don't really believe it. Because, I mean.
No, they don't.
One practice is where you are. But then the next one, they're saying he's his only.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, it can't be. You're,
say it again. I'm missing you.
One word they might say, yeah, we're the children of God. But then they're always saying Jesus is his only.
Yeah. And that word only is not a good rendering. That's it. Again,
the only means that him, and that's it.
At that time, he was the only one who was begotten, but we were begotten in him. So anything that comes out of him is still considered that, see.
I think we were begotten before the foundation.
Well, we truly were, but we were chosen in him. In Ephesians 1, it says we were chosen in him before the conception of the world.
In him, Christ, and him, Jesus.
In him, Christ. Jesus wasn't around just that time yet. Okay. And everybody, see, people that read with the natural mind, it's all about Jesus. But Jesus even said, don't worship me, worship God.
They skip over that.
Huh?
Well, they say the same breath, Jesus is God.
But he's not. He was just like us. He's part of God, but he's not God. He's not God the Father. He's God the Son, just like we are God the Sons, not God the Fathers.
I think those that's, if they have any sort of mind that are attending church, they would question that. I mean, I questioned it. Why are you telling me that Jesus is God? He was not.
Nope. He clearly said he wasn't. Do not worship me. Said it twice. Okay, so, you know, but again, you're talking to people that are carnally minded. Now, some people, and we were the same place at one time, we heard the same thing they heard, and we believed the same things they believed, because we were ignorant at the time. We hadn't opened our minds up and submitted ourselves, and we'll get that here in a minute about things changing and persuading us, you know. But we were in the same place, and we were just as deceived as they are right today. It's okay. Everybody has a process to go through. The ones who hear.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Helicopters. They're checking for pot. Really, they're flying. This is the time of year they look for the pot fields right before they harvest them. That's what it is. They've been flying all morning. They figure everybody's in church. They won't be out cultivating their crops, so we can get there and get them. Okay, we finish with verse 2. Verse 3. And every man that has this hope in him purifies himself even as he is pure. It should say literally, and all the ones that has this hope in him purifies themselves just as he is pure. We're talking about the Christ. Not just Jesus the man, but Jesus was our example It was you. Jesus was you. He was an example set forth. He was the pattern son. That's what we need to pattern ourselves after. He came and he already told us these things in the Old Testament, but nobody knew them. Nobody believed it. No one had any understanding. So he sent his son to carry the message. He was the messenger of the book of Revelation. The message of Christ in you, the hope of glory. Okay? The reality of it. He came to bring it forth so we could see it. So we could see him. And if we could see him as he is, it says, didn't he see, we shall be like him in verse 2? We'll be just as he is when we see him. But we have to see an example in humanity. We need that example so we can believe it's real. We don't want to trust God. Majority of people has to see something, don't they? I think the New Covenant says, blessed is the ones who don't see but yet believe. Okay? I didn't see Jesus walking around in the flesh, but I believe what's going on.
Never got to anymore.
No. See? But I believe.
Never will.
No, never will see him in the flesh because he's already reverted to spirit. Okay. Verse 4. Whosoever commits sin transgresses the law, also the law, because for sin is the transgression of the law. Let's redo that again. All the ones that, where it says whosoever, all the ones that commit, there's several words, there's two words there, posho, which should say all the ones that do err, not commit sin, but do err.
Well, mine says practice.
Well, I ain't got there yet, I don't think. There is some translation that says it that way. They transgress or violate the law, okay? Because to err is the transgression or the violation of the law. So, but now, why is Paul talking about the law? This is the way it's translated, okay? Why is Paul talking about the law when Paul knows the law has been fulfilled? Excuse me, John. Why is John saying this when he knows that it's already passed over? We're in a new covenant. Correct?
So it's still trying to live under the law.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, people who translate this book translate everything law. It's not about the law, is it? The only law we have now is the law of love. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, body, and love your neighbor as self. And all the law and the prophets hang on these two. Correct?
And that's not a law.
That's just what it is. That's just the truth. It's got to be about the love. That's what he come to show us. He come to show us love. And that's what this whole chapter is about, teaching us about the love of God. We need to know, we need to understand that people who hold you to a standard is law. Would you agree to that?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to hold you to a standard, it's a law. Just as Ben going to school, they hold him to a standard of things at school, do they not? Okay, that's a law, but that's in the world. We're not talking about this thing, but that's just as an example. There's a standard that we're held to. If you go to a church and they hold you to a standard, guess what? They're under the law. And Galatians 4 says, if you're under the law, you're cursed. Hello, how many want to be cursed? I don't. I was already under the curse at one time, but I found out it was taken away. That's what he was brought forth, wasn't it? He was brought forth to tell us that. Verse 5 says, and you know that he was manifested or made apparent to do what? To take away or to totally remove our sins, and in him is no sin at all. Okay? We know that he was manifested or made apparent to remove our sin. Well, hello, was he a success or a failure?
Yeah.
If he's a success, then why is anybody holding you to any kind of a standard? Because if you believe there's a standard you have to abide by in God, guess what you just did? You just crawled back under the law. You just hung him back on the cross because his blood wasn't good enough.
Man's law.
I understand, but that's what this was. It was the law of Moses, wasn't it? It was man's law. I know people don't understand that. I hope God shows it to them. Okay, verse 6. All the ones that abide in him errs not. If you abide in Christ, how could you do anything wrong?
You already called me that there is no sin.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. If you abide in him, you don't have to worry about anything, do you? You make a mistake, you say, whoops, I won't do that again, and go on. You don't have to sit on your knees for 2 weeks and beg God to forgive you. It's already been taken care of, hasn't it? He came to remove the sin, right? To take away the sin and the penalty of the sin. It's all taken away. So we know if we abide in him, we don't err. But all the ones that err has not seen him, nor even neither known him. They're just talking. The church is full of people today who are wonderful people, who are ignorant, and that's not a bad word. Like we said earlier, it's not having enough information to make the right decisions. And being ignorant, they're being misled by leaders in the church. It's telling them what to do. And rather than spending a few dollars and buying a Strong's Concordance or getting a Bible program where you can get in and check this stuff out real quick on your computer, a whole lot quicker, they just go to church on Sunday morning and believe whatever the preacher said. Well, he was wearing a suit and tie. Good God, you know he had to tell the truth.
Swallow it like
a Yep, just swallow it down. Verse 7, little children, let no man deceive you. What in the world is that saying?
Don't listen to man.
Don't listen to the man. Listen to the Spirit of God that's coming from the person. If that's not the Spirit of God coming from him,
run.
Don't listen to it. Run. Make a new door through the wall or something.
Get a new plan, Sam.
Yeah. What is it? Jump out the back, Jack, or something like that? Get out of there, man. But, I mean, we can joke about it, but it's serious. The only one that can deceive you is you. And the way you deceive you is when you don't do any of your homework and find out the truth for yourself. I wouldn't deceive anybody for anything in the world, but that doesn't mean that my tongue isn't in a slippery place and it might say something maybe out of context. If you believe every word just because I say it, see, that's wrong. You got to hear what I say, and you got to sift it out yourself. What's a clean animal do? They take their food in, and they go lay down somewhere like a cow or a sheep or something, or a deer, and they regurgitate it and chew it again. It's a symbol of you hearing the truth, going and checking out and see if it's true or not. Like Paul said, be a good Berean and search the Scriptures to see if what I say is true.
If you're really in tune with yourself too, when somebody says something,
you'll know it.
Your spirit will pick up like, no, there's something off about that.
If it's not right, yes. It should absolutely, one way or the other, it should be automatic.
And if it doesn't, you haven't been awakened to
That's right.
do that discernment yet. It'll come, it's just not there.
Just keep at it. Do the best you can do. And that's all anybody can do, isn't it? Do the best you can do.
You're seeking after the truth in it, whether or checking out what they said or what you heard or what you've seen. See if you if that's you swallow or regurgitate, you go out and check it out again.
That's right. Study. And if it isn't good, vomit it out and leave it out.
Yeah. Leave it alone. If it's not, if it is, then
yep.
Cool, you've learned something new.
But don't let anybody deceive you. And the worst one to deceive you is you when you become lax in your responsibilities. And again, we'll say, like, I'll use Ben because he's obviously been very faithful in what he's doing in his schoolwork and pressing forward to get a degree. Hey, that's commendable because that's a commitment for life, isn't it? As a young man, as you learn how to apply yourself through your schoolwork and all these things and getting things ready to go into the world to work and live, that's how you'll work through the world. You're putting them standards right into your mind. That's the way I got to do it. It worked here, it'll work there. He's proved it. And he goes on and says, the ones that do righteousness, they are righteous, just as he is righteous. See, if I hear something out there and I say, what does that sound? I don't know, because I don't pay attention to things. But if I hear a dog barking out there, I can say, that's a dog. It's not a wolf howling, it's a dog. It's not a cat meowing, it's a dog. You know because you've experienced it. You understand something. And most people never do the work that it takes to get them to have the relationship with the Spirit of God. So when He does speak to you, and He's speaking to you all the time, but how many people listen? How many people listen to what He says? And God has said things to me, and I've repeated them, just come out of my mouth. And as soon as I got through with a message, I'd go hit the computer and see if what He said. You know, He's never lied to me yet. He amazes me at times. I say things come out of my mouth. Sometimes I said, you go ahead and preach. Let me go here and take notes. You know, that's the way it feels. It's just a strange feeling coming out of your mouth when you know you've never even thought those things before. Okay. Verse 8, is that where we're at? I said, just as He is righteous. Okay. Verse 8. The ones that commits or do err, they are of the what? What are they of?
False accuser.
It's the diabolos, the false accuser. The accuser. Okay. What is the accuser? It's what's right between our ears. That thing in there is what accuses you every single day of not being worthy.
It's actually what we were just talking about in the other thing, about don't let man sow deception. Somewhere along the line, you let that seed get in there.
Yep. And you got to strip that weed out. Yeah. But the word is diabolos, what they use for devil. But this, again, that's just talking about the accuser. Because the accuser erred from the beginning because what? For this purpose, the Son of God was manifested or made apparent that He what? Cross out that word might, because it's an added word. It's not there. That He destroyed the works of the accuser. What was he made apparent for? Why was He manifested? To destroy the works of the accuser. Okay.
Once that works of the accuser is destroyed,
it's destroyed.
Who you are.
Then that's who you are. Did He say He was going to do a magic wand tap on the forehead and you'd be done?
No. You're searching for gold.
You find little nuggets laying everywhere. And as you assimilate them into your system, and they start hooking together, and all of a sudden the light comes on, you start saying, oh my goodness. And then you just start finding things more and more and more. The light gets brighter every day.
I always think that, why have you made me this way? Why did you hide me? Mm-hmm. Why was I hidden? And the whole thing is you're asking yourself, why did you hide me?
Yeah, I hid me.
I hid me.
Yeah. Adam's the one that did it. He's the one that got us messed up from the beginning.
My
Adam.
Yeah.
That says right there, probably I looked it up.
Yep.
For destroyed works of the, you know, false accuser. One of the things here is saying it's to loosen.
It's what?
To loosen the grip of that palm line.
Yeah. Right. And it didn't say rip it out, did he?
No, break it up and melt it, dissolve it.
He just loosened the grip on your mind.
Open it up.
So you can get away from it.
So when these pressures come, each one of them, when you have to go all the way through the stuff, you get a little bit more enlightenment in that area. That loosens that grip on
it. A little bit more every time.
Oh, that's what I want to see.
Yep, it's all right. Verse 9. All the ones that is born from out of God does not... It says commit sin or does not err, okay? Because his seed remains in him, and he cannot err because he is born from out of God. Now, he's telling you that your spirit can't make a mistake.
Nope.
Hey, your spirit can't be defiled.
Your spirit is who you are.
That's who you are. This flesh is not who you are. See, that's that confused identity that we got from the Garden of Eden. And the church world grabbed a hold of it. The church world grabbed a hold of it and said, that's who you are. You are that man. But we've never been that man.
It was.
We've always been the child of God, but we've come into that deception when he said, let no man deceive you. You bought into it, so whose fault is it?
Yourself.
You know, it's only you. You can't blame nobody else. Mm-hmm. Nothing external is your problem.
That's why you have to walk out your own salvation, your own deliverance from that
thing within
that you won't let go of.
Yep. That's, well, it's a security blanket to most people. It's the only thing you've known, right? You're familiar with that. I feel safe in this little area, even though it's caving in on me, but it's the safest thing I know.
Well, lots of times we'll do that, and you and I have been discussing lots of things here recently saying, you know, do you know you do that? And whenever you do it, it's like, oh, wow, I really did do that. And you really don't want to let go of it because that common phrase that everybody says, well, that's just the way I am.
No, that don't work.
No, the I am ain't that way. Yeah. You are.
No, the flesh is that way. And, you know, I've said for years, if you probably go back on tapes 15, 20 years ago, I said, I love people enough to tell them the truth, even if it violates our relationship. You know what I mean? It's still, I would rather tell you the truth and have you be angry at me and walk away than to lie to you and keep you as an associate. Because I can't tell you keep you as a friend if I lie to you, can I? Could I be your friend if I lied to you?
No, because it's all false.
The whole relationship is false. So that's just who I am. I get in trouble.
You just said that. That's just who I am.
No, that's who I am, telling the truth. You was looking at the wrong side of it. That's who I am. I'm just going to tell the truth regardless. You know, it doesn't make any difference to consequences. Just tell the truth. At verse 10 now. In this, the children of God are apparent. It's pretty obvious who the children of God are. They're the ones that are different from everybody else. Aliens don't look like, act like, dress like, or talk like children of the world, do they? We're different.
Why didn't you say 1 Timothy 1?
Excuse me?
See, verse 21 says, and this, the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest.
Yeah, but that's it. Okay, but in King James says it a little differently.
Okay.
In this, the children of God are manifest or apparent, and the children of the devil or the carnal mind, the accuser. Whosoever does not righteousness, or all the ones that does not righteousness, is not of God. Also, the ones that love not his brother, they're not of God. He's just separating, these are the ones that are of God and these are the ones not, and you can tell by their actions. What was another one? Jesus said, you'll know a tree by the fruit it bears. You'll know a human being by the actions that they portray. Right? Verse 11. For this is the message, literally the commandment. And if you look in Leviticus 19, 18 through 34, you know what you got? The commandments. That we heard from the beginning that we should love one another.
I like this in the Amplified.
Yep.
It said, because this is the message or the announcement which you heard from the first.
Mm-hmm. And the first is, from the first, Jesus said, I am the first and the last.
Well,
and it came from him. The Christ in him.
Yeah, the Christ that came out of him is the one that spoke.
I understand. And that was the first and the last. He's everything. Everything in between. That we should love one another. Not as Cain. And Cain was a fabricator. Okay? He was a smith. So everybody named Smith is not a wicked person. In the flesh, they probably are. Okay? Who was from out of the wicked one. Cain was from out of the wicked one. Or the Poneros. And that means wicked. And we're talking about the accuser again. And slew his brother. And wherefore slew him? Why did he slay him? Why did Cain slay Abel? Because his own works were evil and his brothers were innocent or holy. His brother did the right thing and he didn't. right? He was jealous of his brother because his brother did the right thing. Do you think Cain had the opportunity? Cain was the older brother. He had all the opportunity in the world to know what was right and wrong, more than Abel did.
Chose
to do it his way.
You know, I just saw in that they were brothers, but they came from the same tree.
Mm-hmm. Good and evil from the same tree. That's humanity. There's good and evil in both in all humanity. Positive and negative in everything.
And the thing of it is who said it was wrong? Who said it was good?
Humans put a label on it.
Into the sacrifices and the religion.
Well, they both gave sacrifices, but one was the right sacrifice, and one wasn't. That was the problem.
It was still a.
He said Cain, I think, was a tiller of the ground.
Yep.
Abel had the sheep, but he gave a blood sacrifice, which was required. Okay, so if he'd have went to his brother Abel would have given him. Or sold him a animal to sacrifice.
Abel walked in the truth and Cain was in the sin.
He was in the dirt playing. Okay? Because of his works were evil and his brothers was righteous. There's the problem. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world what? Hates, detests, or persecutes you.
Duh.
Hello?
We've done that every day.
See, when the cosmos, the orderly arrangement, the word cosmos is not about this earth we stand on. That's the Greek word gehe, which means the globe, the round ball we live on. But cosmos is the orderly arrangement, and it's the orderly arrangement in the mind of man. And that thing that man devises is what hates you and what detests you and persecutes you because you don't go with the flow. That you're going against the flow of what they deem as right or wrong. So, obviously, you're a fish swimming upstream, right?
You don't go with the flow.
No, we don't go with the flow, that's all. We go the way that we're being led to go. That's as simple as that. We know that we have passed from death into life because we love the brethren. See, when you have a love for each other, that tells you right there who you are. The ones that loves not his brother abides where? Or remains where? The word there actually says carnality, but to be carnally minded in 1 Corinthians 3, 1 through 9 says to be carnally minded is death. They remain in death because they remain in carnality. Correct? Verse 15. Whosoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has the ageless life abiding in him.
As a man thinks in his heart.
So is he. If you detest and hate someone, I've had a lot of things happen just in the last few months, really. A few things happened, and this one individual has been very negative to me, and said things to me and did things. And I told him I didn't like him, but I love him. I don't like what you're doing. I don't like that. And he threw cups of coffee up over the hood of my truck, you know, and things when he was leaving at McDonald's and just things like that. People said, and the man's 80 years old, 80 some years old. And they said, you ought to go there and kick the sides of his truck in or spray paint it. And I said, the can of spray paint would cost more than his truck, though. He had a piece of junk. That's what I told him. I said, I'd be crawling in the same hole he lives in, and I ain't going there. I prefer not to go there. And they said, you ought to do it. I said, well, I'm not going to. Let it go.
Joe's friends.
Yeah. And you know what? That man that did that to me looks like warmed over death in the last few months. He is horrible looking. I mean, it's amazing how he's deteriorated in the last few months.
Well, yeah.
He's so bitter and negative. It's eating him alive. I mean, and we don't even see him maybe once a month now.
It
could be all kinds of things eating him up. I mean, I don't know what it is. And I never wished anything on him, but I have no use for him in my life real close because he's a negative. Well, he's doing it to himself. There's no doubt. And nobody likes him. I mean, everybody over there, no one likes him. But that's just the way it is. Okay, it was 15 was the last one, right? 16. And by this, it should say, by this, know we have the love of God, because he laid down his what? His life. Okay, he laid down his life for us. The word life here is not what you think it is. It's suke. And that means what?
Soul.
Okay? He laid down his soul. He didn't lay down his life because he didn't lay down his spirit. He laid down his flesh body for us.
Remember what I told you the other day?
What?
That he didn't lay down his life to save us, but for the truth, his life was crucified.
For speaking the truth. But he laid down his life to pay for the price of all this, the errors that have been made throughout eternity. But he laid down his soul, because the word is suke, for us, and we are under obligation. That word ought isn't really ought, like, well, you should or you could or maybe or something. It's we're under obligation to lay down our lives or our sukes for the brethren. Okay? We should be able to lay down our suke, our physical lives, for the brethren. Does that mean we have to go out and let somebody kill us? Do we have to be killed? No, we can give up our lives, our suitcases, in many ways.
I think he also told us to forgive them because they don't know what they're doing.
Understand, but I'm just saying there's a lot of different ways you can lay down your soul. You don't have to physically die as he did on the cross. That was an example. He went to the ultimate. We don't have to go that far, although maybe some will. Who knows? Everybody doesn't have to go that way. If everybody that was the true Son of God got killed, then there wouldn't be any sons of God, would there? What example would there be in the earth if every one of us got killed that was telling truth? Physically. Can anybody answer that?
Spirit is.
No, I'm saying if all the people who have the truth and are speaking truth were physically killed, who would be speaking the truth? It wouldn't happen. See, so everyone isn't going to be eradicated on the face of the earth because you speak truth.
Well, and that's why, like I said, I think that's why they thought that if they put him on the cross, they was going to kill the truth. And he had already planted
the seed, so it's too late. But they were ignorant, they didn't know that.
And seed produces life, huh?
Yep. That's a fact. Verse 17, but whoso has the cosmos, the world, the cosmos's goods, and sees his brothers have need, and shuts up his heart of compassion from him, how dwells the love of God in him? Those, he's trying to show you, these are examples of how you should see yourself. If you see yourself walking over top of somebody for some personal reason, I don't like that person, whatever, and you can't help that person just because you don't like them, if you have the capacity and the need arises, I'm not talking about these beggars all over town over here that's probably got more money than all of us put together, probably driving Mercedes and living in big homes up on the hilltop, and they're down there with a sign begging. I know that that's all a scam. But when we truly see somebody out there needing something, we should try to do the best we can to help them. And it didn't mean that you gave everything you had until your family's out on the street. That's not what it's talking about. Absolutely. And then verse 18 says, my little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. That's an effort, you know, actions and truth. What is the truth? Christ is the truth, correct? Didn't he say, I am the truth? Okay, so we're doing it in a way that the same way that the Father would do it. Because whatever Christ is, the Father is. He said, I and the Father are one, correct? And he made this prayer, the Christ speaking through the man Jesus in John 17. He said, Father, make them one with me as I am one with you. Now, do you think he's not going to get what he asked for? He was asking for it through the nature and the character of the Father himself. And you think the Father's not going to fulfill that? That would be absurd to think that, wouldn't it? See, so it's going to be taken care of. But the way people can tell and the way you can judge yourself is when people do things with actions, not with just words. You can tell there's something there. Verse 19 goes on and says, "And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall what?"
Assure.
The word assure is really not there. It really is the word persuade. And shall, we know the truth, and that truth shall persuade our hearts before Him or in His presence. The word persuade. See, it's not talking about us doing anything. Listen to what it says. "And by this we know that we are of the truth." And it should say, "And that truth shall persuade our hearts in His presence."
What does that truth come out at in the Strong's? Is that?
I think it's 225, I think, is the number. It just popped in my head.
Verse 19?
Yeah.
225.
I don't know why. It just popped up in my head as soon as you said that.
It's truth.
But what is the truth? It's the truth of God, which is the Word of God, which Jesus said, "I am the Word and I am the truth." Right?
However you pronounce that, that's what the word is.
Yeah. So anyway, the truth that we hear will persuade us. Remember what Jesus said, and this is a parallel to where John wrote in John 8:31-32. "If you continue in my word, you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." But it's only the truth that you know, and that's what he's saying here. Same principle. You got to know the truth, and that truth will change your heart into the nature and the character of the Father. But you got to know it before it'll have any effect on you. See, I can go buy 10 gallons of paint to paint my house. But if I just set it out there in the parking lot beside the house, what's going to happen? Somebody probably steal the bucket of paint, for sure, around here. But the house is never going to change color, is it? See, you have to have some action, like it says up there in verse 18.
That's what I was going to say. Truth is
in action.
Yes, it's an action word. It's a verb. It is a verb. Yes.
It is a verb. Just like love, truth, love and the truth are the same thing.
Right.
And they're both verbs. They should be in action. And I heard a man one time say something. He was flooded out down in Kentucky. Remember Ron?
Mm-hmm.
And he lived in an old church. And he converted it to a house to live in. And I said, "Well, I'm a little different. Me and Ron had been separated for years. We hadn't found each other. We got back together because he had moved to Florida. And he come back up here, and he said, "Well, I found this church and bought it and converted it into a house." And I said, "Well, I took my house and converted it into a church." So I said, "We just went different ways there still." He couldn't handle the truth either, but he was pretty Pentecostal. His mother was Pentecostal. But that's the thing. See, that truth that we know is the only thing that can change us. Nothing else works.
I've seen that as an energy.
It is. It's a verb.
Yeah, it's an energy word. It's constantly action inside of you.
Yep.
Not a noun.
Verse 20. "Because if our hearts accuse us," which side's that?
The carnal mind.
See, that's the carnal mind. That's the death side.
Because if it's an accusing, it's not
God. It's not God. There's no condemnation in Christ. God is greater than our heart and knows all things. Verse 21. "Beloved, if our hearts accuse us not, we have confidence toward God." Now that's not stated real good there. It says we have what? The word confidence means a free and fearless confidence to speak to God. See, when we realize He's our Father, not just words on a page somewhere that you read and it's saying God's our Father. How many people today you think is reading in the Bible today saying God is my Father? In the world, how many people, how many millions and millions and millions of people are reading that? But how many of them know that God is their Father? Have an experience of God as their Father?
I'm 1%.
That's probably what it is, maybe 1%. And that's what he's telling us. We have a free and fearless confidence to speak to God. And see, most people in church will say, they'll go to the preacher and say, "Would you pray for me? Would you pray for me? Don't you know how to talk to your Father? Are you afraid of him?" That's never set well with me since I was in the church, even when I was in the church system. Why would I ask somebody to pray for me? I can talk to my Father. I'm not afraid of him. He's not going to hurt me. He's not going to bite me. Is he? See? He's love.
They're not worthy.
That's what they think. See, that doesn't mean they are not worthy. No. It means they think they're not worthy.
That's their mentality.
So, as he thinks, there he is. That's the way he's living. I've never, probably when I was in the world before I ever started going to church, I might have been a little unsure of how I should speak to God, maybe. But once I had this relationship start with him, I mean, people thought I was crazy when I first started, you know.
They
still think I'm crazy. It's okay. I don't care because I do have a relationship with my Father. It doesn't make any difference what anybody else thinks about it, does it? It didn't talk about having group relationships. And that's what this man-made thing is and called religion, is everybody having a group relationship and one guy's supposed to, and he's going to tell you he is, whether he knows God or not.
When you're in the marriage bed, you don't have a crowd.
No, it's an intimate separated thing going on. Now look at verse 22. "And whatsoever we ask, we receive of him, because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight." Now, if you think that you can say, "Okay, God, I'm looking for a big armored truck to pull up here and dump out a few $1,000,000 for me today," you think it's going to happen?
There's something to think
about. See, because anything you ask in my name, in my nature and character, the Father will be right, take care of it. See, he'll take care of it. But if you're asking for things for the flesh, do you really think he's going to supply that? Why, no. See, that's what they believe. But just because they believe it won't make it true, will it?
No, that's really what the best for you or not.
No. Yeah. He knows what's best for you, and that's what you'll get.
It's a delusion.
A big one. In verse 23, "And this is the commandment that we should believe," or literally have faith in, not believe on, but have faith in the name, or the authority, the nature, and the character of his Son, Jesus Christ. Because that character is the same as the Father, isn't it? Isn't Jesus and the Father, weren't they one? The Spirit of, inside of Jesus, the Christ, was one with the Father. It says, "And love one another just as he gave us commandment." In John 6:29, let me read that one to you. Gospel of John. That would have dinner. 6:29. I did 9. 6:29. Okay. One more page. Okay. "And Jesus responded and said to them, 'This is the work of God, that you believe into him whom he has sent.'" Not believe that he is, but believe into him. When I believe and understand what the message that Jesus brought as the pattern son, that as he is, so are we now in this world, it says. Correct?
That goes back to what we were saying earlier about the truth being an energy thing.
Sure it is. But the energy will change you.
That was the thing that he was actually saying in that verse of reading.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure. That's what I'm trying to tie it all together.
Uh-huh.
See? But we have to believe in the nature, into that nature and character. If we believe what these words say to us, then it will give us the transformation that we're looking from the carnality and death realm into the life realm. We no longer believe in this flesh. We don't trust in the flesh. Flesh and blood will not inherit the kingdom.
Death is not alive.
No, never was. It's temporal. It's all temporal. But life is eternal. Right? No, it never ended. And love one another just as he gave us commandment that you love one another. John talked an awful lot about love, more than anybody. And verse 24, and the one that keeps his commandments dwells in him, and he in them. And hereby, or by this, we know that he abides in us by the Spirit which he has given to us. And see, when John wrote this, he wasn't talking, he didn't say to me, he said to us. That means he's got brethren out here that have the same thing that he has.
All inclusive, instead of saying us and them.
Well, the church teaches the us and them mentality, which is a division. God didn't come to divide, he came to unite. Hence the little saying that I use all the time, what you believe will divide us. But what you know will unite us. Any more questions? Comments? And like I used to tell Mark McCain, got any rocks to throw? We'll receive them all. he was a good guy. He just tied up in where he's at.